And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
It's so classic flying saucer, really, standing in the clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Hello and welcome to the show that we call Podcast UFO. I'm Martin Willis, your host, and we're coming at you live like every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Dark Matter Radio Network. You can go to our website for our easy sign-in chat room and join us in our show live. We have another great one for you tonight, including upcoming UFO news. That's coming up in just a few minutes with Open Minds' Alejandro Rojas. Our guest tonight is Yvonne Smith, and we'll be discussing her book, Coronado, The President, The Secret Service, and Alien Abductions. This is a great book that describes the explicit and dramatic detail of the famous case involving a mass abduction of about a dozen people, I think it was, in San Diego, and that was back in 1994. Now, I met Yvonne last year, and I visited with her in her office in California. And wait till you hear what happened when we tried to record a show. How's that for a teaser? Well, I got a number of emails about our last show last week with Sheila. Now, a lot of people liked her. I liked her, too. But they said we had a lot of, well, quote, awkward moments, unquote. Well, it might be true. That can happen sometimes. Isn't that right, Alejandro?
This is awkward. Just kidding. Yeah, unfortunately it happens, but you know what? That's kind of fun. It's a spice of radio, I think, when something like that happens. Even on talk shows, you know, they make fun of the awkward moments, and it can be kind of fun these days.
Yeah, I'm going to try to jump on the opportunity the next time that really happens. Somehow, I don't know what I'm going to do, but maybe I'll get one of those, a squeak toy or something.
Yeah. Awkward's the new cool.
Oh, that's I'm comfortable at that.
Yeah.
So, hey, what's going on with the UFO news this week?
Oh, there's a lot of news as usual. So I have a number of things I want to talk to you about. And I know we don't have a whole lot of time because you got great interview. Wonderful. So this is going to be great. I know it. But I'll hit on some of these big stories this week. One of the big ones is a video that comes out of Milan, Italy. And it's this object that was filmed on July 6th by a gentleman named Antonio Urzi. And a lot of the news is picking it up. However, a lot of them don't know that Antonio Urzi, for over a decade, has been getting a lot of UFO videos and pictures. And a lot of these have been what you could title too good to be true, right, which, of course, makes people skeptical about what he's capturing. So I did post a video where someone kind of explains how he believes that Urzi is getting these photos. However, this video is something different than what he normally gets. It is a spectacular video with these lighted objects that are kind of blinking in the sky. Some people have said maybe they're angels or something like that. I unfortunately have a feeling that they might be balloons, and he calls it an Ebony. He says incredible Ebony on Milan, and a lot of people are wondering what the heck does that mean. Actually, Ebonies is something that was coined in Mexico, and essentially it means an unidentified anomalous biological entity. So essentially, in Mexico, they were getting these long string kind of looking videos, and they called them Ebony because they thought they moved like they were big snakes in the sky.
Now, were these the things? Didn't they spit out little things too?
There were some that did that. Yeah, those were. But those, I don't think they labeled those a Bonnie. They labeled those motherships because, yeah, there were a couple videos that I still think are interesting. I'm not so sure what they are yet. Where, yeah, there's a couple of those that spit out some other smaller craft. And those are really cool videos that I have never heard an explanation for.
Hmm. Now, this one in particular, you're right. It does look like sort of like a clear balloon with, like, lights inside of it. Almost like an organic type of figure. You know, it does have that appearance.
Yeah, well, you know, when balloons are tied together, they can look like this. And this is often true. You see videos where they kind of move weird because of the wind. In Mexico, I actually met Antonio Urzi a few years ago in a conference that Jaime Musan had in Mexico City. He's a famous ufologist out there. And some of their researchers presented these Ebony, and they looked exactly like those wedding, you know, trains of balloons that had gotten loose. And they admitted these look like balloons, but they're moving so weird they're probably not. But, you know, up in the sky, the way the wind is, you know, they can move kind of weird. And some people took a look at this. Actually, Mark D'Antonio, photo analyst, just got back to me on Facebook today, and I posted that in a story. But, yeah, he explains he thinks pretty sure that this video is probably some balloons tied together. But, you know, I implore people to take a look and let us know what you think. And Urzi has a number of, like I said, these too good to be true kind of UFO videos.
Yeah,
you definitely, if you're not familiar with him and his videos, you'll want to take a look and kind of decide for yourself, do you think he's hoaxing these things or not?
Yes, and for the listener, you can go on Podcast UFO and right in the show notes are all the links that Alejandro is talking about. So let's move on to the next one.
The next one, of course, we've been posting some MUFON case files written by Roger Marsh, who's their director of communications. And there was a really interesting photo case that they posted. This is taken in the Ukraine, which, of course, is so much in the news because of the fighting going on there. Really unfortunate. But in the town of Izmail, which is right off the Danube River, on earlier this month, or actually last month, July 14th, a guy was out on his balcony, took a couple pictures, and he looked at them later, and he saw these weird objects in them. Now, I would say 99% of the time when we get a case, hey, I took some pictures, and I didn't see anything at the time, but I looked at them again, and I see these weird things. They're usually bugs or birds,
right?
Because, you know, if a bird's flying by, you don't notice it when you take the picture, and then you forget it was there. You don't even really mentally take note that it was there, and that's what it appears to be. However, these images, they haven't been analyzed yet, but they do look really strange. They don't definitively look like birds, which many of these do. So I think there are really some interesting pictures, and I can't wait till someone takes a look at these.
Yeah, I was just looking at them. They look almost like, you know, disc-like with a dome on top.
Yeah. Yeah, they look like a silver kind of metallic object, your typical domed disc. So really interesting, and maybe we'll never get an answer, but they don't appear to be hoaxed.
Right. Yeah, which is good.
So pretty cool pictures.
So what else is happening?
So what else? Of course, we went to the MUFON Symposium. I think we talked about that last week, us at Open Minds. And we got some interviews, and our videographer, Michael Klein, put together a great piece on this. The theme was UFOs and the media, and they had some of the best people to talk on this there. And I love this video and these interviews because they all kind of – I think this – it really gives you an idea of how UFOs and the media works with UFOs. So we interviewed people like George Knapp, of course, who works for KLAS. He broke the Area 51 story. Bob Lazar, he's been doing this for decades. James Fox, who did arguably the best UFO documentary ever, Out of the Blue. You know, Ben Hansen from Factor Faked, Roger Marsh, the director who's been a journalist for many, many years. So we interviewed guys and we asked them, you know, have you ever been censored when it comes to UFOs? Do you believe there is censorship? And the answer overwhelmingly, and of course, Lee Spiegel with the Huffington Post, the biggest mainstream media covering UFOs on a regular basis. And they all said, no, we've never been censored by someone above. We've never had an editor say you can't cover this. However, they said mostly in the media there's self-censorship because editors typically don't really care about UFOs. The journalists feel like they get made fun of from their peers, and that's one of the reasons they don't cover UFOs. So these guys all have to kind of be courageous enough to say, I don't care if I'm going to get made fun of. I'm going to go out and do this. And they're never told, no, don't do it. And in fact, a lot of their stories become popular, so they go out and do it. So really interesting, I think, that this is the case. It's not so much them being censored by above, but kind of just the social taboo, the stigma of things. Now, George Knapp did say he believes he's been bugged, and some of the people he's interviewed have been harassed, which is interesting. Of course, he covers stories on top secret projects, such as those going on at Area 51. So he was the only one to speak to that, which is interesting. And James Fox, I think, had some insight because he works on kind of these one-off shows, kind of these cable channel shows and stuff like that, like Chasing UFOs. And his comment, which, you know, sounds the same throughout most of these working with TV, it's just that the editors, especially in TV, just don't really care about the topic at all. Their only interest is viewership and money. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that means they have no interest in accuracy, which, of course, comes across in the final cut of many of these shows, including Chasing UFOs, which he was on, and he's very quick to admit that he was certainly dissatisfied with the way those came together.
Well, I understand on the cutting room floor that a lot of things changed in those episodes.
Yeah.
Speaking with Travis Walton, he was pretty upset about what happened to the episode he was in.
Right. Yeah, really unfortunate because the real story, such as, well, in all of these, in my opinion, and including in Travis Walton's, are much, much more interesting, let alone they lend more insight into the world we actually live in. And I think sometimes egos get in the way when these producers think, oh, my creative people, or I can come up with something more interesting. No, you can't. You know, is my answer. What you post is not interesting. It's typically cliche, mm-hmm. and it would be much more interesting to get the real story.
So you can check out all these stories in our show notes again at Podcast UFO. Well, thank you, Alejandro, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, great. Say hello to Yvonne for me, and we'll talk to you next week.
Great. Thanks a lot. So hold on to your hats. Gather around your computers. We're getting ready for our guest, Yvonne Smith, coming right up. Jump in our chat room. It's an easy sign-up. And we'll be right back right after this quick music break by Kerry Lloyd Whitehouse. Yvonne Smith, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. You know, I said in the intro there, I teased everyone out there about the story about being in your studio, but I didn't give the details. What a bizarre thing that happened there.
I remember.
Yeah, and what it was to listening audiences, I sat down in your studio, your office, and we recorded a full session, wasn't it? Yeah, we did a whole show. And
we did.
This sounds really, really strange and hard to believe, but there was like a chanting in the background, and it was really loud. And the craziest thing of it all is I got so frustrated when I was editing it that I deleted the whole thing, and I should have saved it. Because I remember
I was going to ask you if you still have the recording.
It's gone. So no, no one's going to believe me now.
Oh, no, I believe you. I'm a witness.
Yeah.
I was right there. It was very strange, but that's, you know, that happens. many times during interviews on this subject. So I actually really was not surprised. It was strange.
Really? Yes. So we're here tonight to talk about your book and a few other things, of course. But I have actually been to that hotel. Isn't it the Del Coronado or something like that?
Yes, it is. The Del Coronado. It's very famous.
Oh, it's such a beautiful place. But we're going to talk about, and you and I did discuss this when we spoke before, the situation that happened there back in 1994. I think, wasn't Bill Clinton there and all that?
Bill Clinton, his entourage of Secret Service. We were having a huge UFO conference that same weekend, the Triad Conference. At that time, it was sponsored by Robert Bigelow. And my colleagues and I would travel around the country as speakers for the Triad Conferences. So this time, because it was in my backyard in San Diego, they asked me to MC the conference, which I was happy to do. So I was down there along with several of my CIRO support group members when this whole thing happened. Of course, we really didn't grasp the enormity of the situation that weekend. It wasn't until months and, you know, a couple years later when I started putting together all the pieces.
Wow. Now, did it come together like when people often talk about they have dreams and then, you know, other people start talking to each other? And how did it all snowball into people finding out and discovering that something happened?
Well, it was just, you know, gradually, just as you said, that weekend. In fact, it was the Saturday morning when the conference was just getting going. I believe I maybe introduced one or two speakers, and I had a couple of my CIRO members. Now, CIRO is Close Encounter Resource Organization, which is the support group. They came up to me, and you know, they described those one or two that they were having terrible headaches, you know, flu-like symptoms, which is very, very typical after an abduction occurs. But of course, they weren't sure, you know, if something may have happened. But in one hotel room, this was Mike and his wife. He woke up with blood spots on his pillow. And for many years, he kept thinking, oh, I must have hit my chin on the sink, you know, in the bathroom of the hotel. And Alice, who was in the room right next door to his, kept telling them, you know, that doesn't make sense. Like, how could you say you hit your chin? That it was a very small bathroom. It's an old hotel. They were staying at the Village Inn, another landmark there on Coronado Island, and in walking distance to the Del Coronado. There were six people staying in that Village Inn hotel, and so many years he kept, that was his memory, and you know, we call it screen memory because that's not exactly what happened. He actually had blood coming out of his ear, and you know, later on went to the doctor for this, and they found a puncture wound in his ear.
Wow. Are you saying are you saying that the people that were involved in this were at two different locations?
Three different locations.
Really?
We had, because the Del Coronado, as you know, is expensive.
Oh, yeah.
And we had the conference there, and because I was the MC, of course, I was fortunate enough to have the conference pay for my room. I had a beautiful room there. And I had, there were three other CIRO members staying at the Del Coronado. Then I had two other people, Sam and Gary, staying right across the street from the Del Coronado in a small motel. Then we had the six people at the Village Inn. They were all staying on the island. So it wasn't necessarily where they were abducted from just one hotel. It occurred throughout the island, which, you know, later on, I started putting all these pieces together. And maybe, you know, several months after the conference, I began doing some hypnosis sessions in regard to that weekend, especially the one with Mike, because he did have the physical evidence of the blood. And then Alice, who was next door, she came away from that conference with an object in her shin. And eventually, our late Dr. Roger Lear, he took x-rays of it, found that there was something underneath the skin, and eventually Alice decided to have it removed surgically by Dr. Lear's associate. I have the analysis and went through that. I have the details, of course, all in the book, but it was Mike and Alice who really began seeking out the regression sessions because of they felt the physical evidence they had from that weekend. And I had pictures of the blood on Mike's pillow. I mean, I'm so glad he had the frame of mind to take pictures. I always encourage people to take pictures of evidence like blood or marks or scars on their bodies. They wake up the day after, the morning after, and obviously they didn't have this the night before. It's very important for everybody listening out there to take pictures, because you may want to look into your experiences later. Now, this is how long it took me. This happened in March of 1994, and I began writing about it several years ago. I believe it was, I can't even remember the year I started writing. It was probably late 90s, but I had to put it down because of life's, you know, life happens, and I just wasn't ready for the project. And it wasn't until after my first book, Chosen, was published in 2008, that I decided to tackle Coronado again. But it's so huge because of so many people being involved and all the hypnosis sessions and all the transcripts. I actually went down to Coronado Island 2008, summer of 2008, to spend the weekend there so I could start researching, speak to the historian there, ask about the Clinton visit. And we took some pictures. My photographer, videographer, Lori Wagner, took some beautiful photos there on the island. But here we are in 2014. I finally released the book the end of June of 2014. So it took me all these years mm-hmm. to put all these pieces together. But I felt it was this case was too important for not to be presented to the public. And I have a feeling that I'm going to have a second volume, say, or a follow-up to this first book on Coronado, because after I did Coast to Coast with George Knapp, right before I left for the Roswell conference, I had a couple people email me telling me that they recall being on that island on that same weekend. So I'm going to be interviewing them, and as I do more shows, and I think as the book, the longer the book is out and people have a chance to read it, I have a feeling I'm going to be hearing from more people.
Yeah, it seems to snowball like that. Now,
it does.
If you Google Del Coronado Hotel, what will come up is that it's haunted.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Now, I want to just take a little bit of a jag here, and we'll get back to this book. But for the listener, this is actually the first time you've been on the show, second attempt, but the first time you've been on.
And that's right.
If you can go back and tell you know, the audience how you got started and what your specialty is. And when I was in your office, I mean, there was people coming in from all over the country to deal with what they consider their abduction experiences. So can you go into your background and how you got into this and how it's progressed? I mean, you're pretty busy, aren't you?
I'm very busy. The abduction phenomenon is so widespread that I get emails, you know, when I started my practice, early 90s and 91, we didn't have the internet like we have now. We were just starting to use email. So when I started my practice, it was phone calls. I mean, our phone bills were sky high because I would get calls from all over the country. But back then, late 80s is when it was actually my mother had asked me to go with her to the Whole Life Expo, and this was in Pasadena, California, right near where I live up in the foothills. Bud Hawkins at that time during that conference was lecturing, and she knew about Bud Hawkins. My mother was very, very open-minded. She read quite a bit about, you know, paranormal and UFOs. And in fact, she was the one that introduced me to the Betty and Barney Hill case and in Look magazine. So I went with her to Bud's lecture, and I was amazed at what he was presenting. He had his slides, and he was talking about, you know, what happens to these people and all the drawings that he had from his clients. And then the next experience I had was taking my son to, at the time, you know, we had all the bookstores still, like I said, before the internet came in, and took him to, at the time, Crown Books for a school project. And I happened to come across Communion, Whitley Strieber's book. I didn't know who Whitley Strieber was, and I saw the cover of the book, and I thought that was pretty interesting. I picked it up, and I read the side jacket, and I thought, wow, you know, I'm going to buy this book and see what it's all about. I read it in 2 days, and anybody who knows me, I don't read anything in 2 days.
Same here.
Forever. And, you know, I was amazed at what people were experiencing. I began studying hypnotherapy. I went to college, and at that time, as I was studying, I wanted to open my practice to work with cancer patients. When I was gathering my hours in the clinic, I saw a few cancer patients, and it was very rewarding to work with them. So this is what I thought I was going to specialize in, because a very close family member of mine had died not too long before that of cancer. He was only 41 years old. So when I started my practice, I was so surprised to find that I was beginning to see people who were exploring their possible contact experience. So I just thought, you know, gee, it would be interesting to maybe work with some of these abduction cases that I really thought they were just going to trickle in every once in a while, and didn't realize that years later, you know, it makes up about 95% of my practice. I began lecturing and doing shows like yours, you know, over the years, throughout the 90s. And during that time, we had television shows like Encounters and Sightings. And so it was, you know, I felt like I was being interviewed constantly about abductions and my work. And so here I am 23 years later, and published my second book. I mean, believe me, when I started practicing hypnotherapy, I'd never dreamed that I would even, you know, author a couple books. But I feel, when someone gets put on their path in life, this is what happens. You know, doors open, you begin to experience things like writing. I'm considered a writer now, an author, and it's something that I feel blessed with. So, and plus, there's so much need out there for work like this. I am planning to eventually start a institute where I will have workshops for the therapists who wish to work with abduction cases.
Wow. Now, First of all, for the live listener out there, you can jump over to podcastufo.com and jump in our easy sign-in chat room if you'd like to ask Yvonne a question. Yvonne, before we get back into your book, one other thing that comes to mind is it seems like there's a percentage of the population that are claiming that they're having some type of abduction experience. And, I mean, we're talking, I don't know how many people. What do you think about that? Do you think something is really going on in, like, a mass abductions worldwide? Or is this just an American thing? I hear
it. Oh, no. No, not at all. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Sure.
I just came back from Brazil, the big Brazil World Conference in this past May, and as I was lecturing, showing my PowerPoint presentation, and of course, you know, I had an interpreter because everybody there mainly speaks Portuguese. I had people coming up to me afterwards and describing their experience and almost in tears because something resonated with them in my slide presentation. And here these people don't even, you know, they speak Portuguese, we speak English. I mean, it's, and the same thing when I lectured in Italy, when I lectured in England. And so it is definitely worldwide. This is just not in the United States. However, you probably know, Martin, that in the mid-90s, and I believe 2002, maybe it was the second Roper poll, it came out, and the results show that 1 in 50, and this is just in America, you know, in the United States, 1 in 50 American adults experienced something that could point to an abduction. They had some very strange, high strangeness experiences as they, you know, as they fill out these questionnaires. And 1 in 50, can you, I mean, think about that, 1 in 50 American adults.
Amazing. Amazing.
And that's just in the United States, so I mean, they're not even talking about worldwide, but I'm convinced because of all the years I've lectured and spoken to people in other countries, what I've spoken to them one-on-one in private, this definitely is a worldwide experience. So it is more widespread than the average person would want to really know. I think people want to keep their heads in the sand because it is much too frightening to think about something that we don't have any control over coming down and, you know, engaging us.
That's right. We have a question up, a couple of questions up on the message board, but I wanted to ask you first, what is the steps for someone to actually make it to your couch? You know, I mean, do they get referred to you by someone? Do they go to their own therapist and talk about what's going on and somehow you get connected there? How does that work?
Yeah, it's really all of the above. Now with the internet, it's much easier. I have a Facebook page about my work. I also have my... The organization that branched out from CIRO, the support group, called CIRO International, for the purpose of bringing in speakers from all over the world to keep this subject in the forefront and to educate the general public and mainstream media. So they can go to now either Facebook or they could go to www.cirointernational.com, and has my contact information there. I've also, as you mentioned, I've also had referrals from many therapists and medical doctors because they don't know what to do with the subject, and they don't know really how to handle someone who is talking about, you know, seeing a UFO or having contact with this occupant. And this is why I do, it's one of my goals is to begin to train therapists to do this because we certainly need people all over the country. You know, we've already lost my mentor, Bud Hopkins, and Dr. John Mack, who I lectured with, and it's, you know, David Jacobs is on the East Coast, and I'm here. So the Internet now has, of course, made it much easier to connect. I get emails from people all over the world about this. So, you know, they could go to ZeroInternational.com, and then they could see the events that we have coming up. In September, we have Grant Cameron coming in from Canada. And I wanted to say very quickly is that we I'm going to be lecturing in the Contact in the Desert conference this coming weekend in Joshua Tree. I'll be presenting my my work that I've done on my book and also doing a workshop this coming Sunday for abductees, for people who want to sit and share with each other. So it's going to be an experiencer session that I'm going to be doing over the weekend.
Wow. Well, that's great. We do have a bunch of questions that have come up on the message board. A quick one for me, and then I'll start asking the ones that are up there, is if you had to put a percentage on how many people saw a UFO before their abduction or had seen a UFO at one time, and we're talking about an abduction experience or experiences ongoing, what would that percentage be?
I would say over 50% the people who had a sighting. It's a small percentage that never have, but feel that something strange is happening to them. But I would say well over 50%.
Wow. Okay. So here's some questions coming at you. Does Yvonne have any opinion or theory on why the abductions occur?
Oh, my gosh. I'm asked that all the time. That's such a million-dollar question. Right now, I mean, over the last 23 years, I can say now that the abductions are occurring because the alien beings and whoever they are have an agenda. They're very interested in our DNA and reproductive system. They definitely have a hybridization program going, creating hybrids, half human, half alien. I couldn't have said this 20 years ago, but I'm convinced now that that is very central to their agenda, to what they need to accomplish, whatever that is. And hopefully they're not going to pack up their bags and leave without giving us more information and explaining why they're doing this. I also, over the years, have, in working with abductees, there also seems to be a sense of the alien beings are trying to teach us to elevate our higher consciousness, our spiritual sense of ourselves. It just seems that they've been getting the abductees have been receiving these messages about this. You know, whether that's true, I mean, the abductors really don't give much information and certainly not detailed information about what they're doing, but they seem to be concerned about our spiritual well-being. And I also, you know, when you think back at the 60s when, you know, I know Captain Robert Salas very well, when the UFO flew over Malmstrom Air Force Base and turned off the 10 of his ICBM, you know, missiles. They also are very concerned about what we're doing down here with our weaponry. So I think that does tie in with our spiritual growth. And so, you know, it's so difficult to explain what their motive is in just a simple sentence. I mean, so much of it is still speculative because they, as I mentioned before, they have not told me their exact mission, what their mission is. But just from my personal cases and experience working with all these wonderful people who have come forward, this is what I'm starting to form a picture on this. But we'll see. I mean, time will tell, Martin. I just hope that we will have answers, you know, in our lifetime. Mm-hmm. And perhaps, you know, when we cross over, maybe we'll have the answers. I don't know. But thank you, you know, thank them for that question.
Yeah. And you've in working with all these people, you really feel comfortable with what you just said, that you actually think that these, with all the information you've gathered from all these hundreds of people, in your opinion, that's what you think is happening?
I can't, it's not set in stone, but it seems that hybridization, definitely, that program is you know, still going on, and the alien beings be concerned with our spiritual growth, our spiritual welfare, and the part that, you know, they've been, for a very long time, they've been worried about what we're doing out down here with our weaponry, and, you know, because that could affect the rest of the universe, and it's totally understandable. But like I said, this is not, this is just speculation, because this is just from what I have found from my cases and some people that I've worked with. I mean, I've worked with hundreds of people over the years.
Right. You know, I hope we can get back to your book, because we have a lot of questions rolling in. And
sure.
We'll tie it in somewhere. So I'm going to go through these in order. Someone wants me to ask you, who has read and researched everything could be for the subject. I'm sorry, I'm going to read this over again. Martin, ask her if someone who has read and researched everything could be a subject for hypnosis. I think the person's asking if how would they know if there could be, if they could be a subject for hypnosis?
How they could be a subject for
to find out whether they need to go through regression.
Well, if people, I don't know if he's what he's trying to say. I think he may be trying to say if people have read about UFOs and UFO abduction, if they've been contaminated by what they've read. You know, of course, it makes it a little bit more difficult. But even though, and I've had people, you know, reading on the subject, because they're trying to look for answers, and that's totally understandable. I feel that knowledge is power. So even if someone has been reading up on abductions and UFOs, when they go into hypnotic regression and those they begin to relive their own experiences and the emotion wells up and the tears come, they realize that what they're experiencing or reliving is something very real. It's not something that they read. Mm-hmm. So I feel I could tell the difference, you know, with people. And most people, yes, can absolutely be hypnotized. You just have to make up your mind that you're going to allow me or whoever you're working with to be your facilitator. Hypnosis is very safe. There's no drugs used. There's no mind control. It's a very deep state of relaxation. I access the subconscious mind where all of these hidden memories are buried. And I'm talking about just PTSD, people I've worked with from the military, or people who've had terrible car accidents, or people who've been physically or sexually abused. It's all PTSD, it's, you know, suffering a trauma. It does help and heal the person as they bring the memories forward.
Right. Okay. This is kind of a long one here, and it's sort of a statement, but looking for your reaction to it. And this is also from the chat room message board. It always struck me as odd that these beings who can traverse the universe with technology hundreds or thousands of years ahead of us need to do something as archaic as physically abduct and probe people. You would think they could manufacture anything they might need and not have to travel all the way here for whatever they need. And what's your opinion about that comment?
Well, you'd think so. And you know, I've heard this many, many times before over the years. But we're looking at it as from a human standpoint. Mm-hmm. You know, we really don't know who they are or what they're capable or not capable of. Obviously, they need our material. They need our blood. They need our sperm. They need our ova to create these hybrid beings. And, you know, they may not be traversing millions of miles. I mean, it could just be they step into, you know, they unzip and they step right into our world, you know, say the parallel universe. You know, we don't know. Many of the scientists I've heard say, oh, you know, it's impossible for them to travel this far, and why would they travel, you know, and just abduct people? And but they, as I mentioned before, when I listened to Michio Kaku, mm-hmm. You know, it's you can bend time and space, so they may not have to travel millions of miles. I mean, they just could be right here, zip in and out. We don't know. I mean, we're looking at this, and obviously we don't know, and we're looking at this, we can't help it, with what we know. And but all I know and all I can say is that this is a real experience. It is a physical experience. People are being taken from their homes, from their cars. They're put back, but they are examined. They've been followed throughout their lives. It is an intergenerational experience. They're very, very interested in family lines. And, you know, when I interview one or two people that come into my office, I know when, say, one or two people from the same family, I know I'm going to be interviewing and working with other family members because it is a family affair. So, I could only speak with what I know from my research and my cases, but my goal is to keep talking about this, to doing shows like yours, Martin, to, you know, keep bringing this out into the open so that people no longer have to be afraid to talk about, you know, even if they had a sighting, no longer afraid where they're going to lose standing in the community, they're going to lose their jobs. If that's outrageous just because they talk about a UFO. And to me, it violates someone's civil rights when they can't talk about this and they're afraid that they're going to lose everything and that they've built up in their lives just because it's a UFO. It is just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's something they have to deal with. Another question out there, and we have about like 9 minutes, so I just want to jump back to your book. So let's just burn quickly through these three questions right here. Of the contactee population, what percentage are you thinking suffers from a post-traumatic stress disorder?
Well, the people who come to me all suffer from PTSD. That's why they're coming to me for help. Now, I know that there are people there out there that have said they have, you know, all positive experiences, and that's wonderful, and I hope that really is true for them. But I would say, you know, 100%, of course, of my clients, of my cases, they've all suffered from PTSD.
Right, yeah. Okay. Do you see a connection between abductees and other paranormal activity?
There seems to be a overlapping of someone who's had an abduction experience and having paranormal activity around them or around their house. Now, you know, we don't know what came first, the chicken or the egg, but, you know, it may be that having an abduction experience or having a paranormal experience may have opened them up to all these experiences. But I know that over the years, people talk about having you know, the typical paranormal lights going off and on, toilets flushing, and we've discussed this in the support group meeting. So it's you know, it's another mystery.
Some of it makes me almost think that some of this, if this is really going on, that this, some of this could be interdimensional, just as easy as anything else. You know, it's
absolutely.
You know, who knows if we'll ever have the answer, like you said. One last question from the message board, and then we'll go back to your book. Have you been able to identify any abduction trends in your research?
Abduction trends. I'm not sure what they mean by abduction trends.
Things changed? Let's just say, have things changed in the abductions, the way they've been happening, reported to you over the last several years that you've been doing this?
They don't seem to. The experience is the same. It's all very similar. It's those it gives them the hint. You know, they're having bits and pieces of memory coming up, very vivid dreams or nightmares. They still seem to be or are very interested in our DNA. They're people are taken aboard and they're shown these very strange babies or children. Sometimes they are shown the control room, you know, almost given a tour of the control room. They are taken, of course, to examination rooms. They are shown at some point pictures of devastation, perhaps to see what their reaction is or to give us a warning. And certainly the abduction experiences have not slowed down. So I've been asked that as well, and I do not find that they have slowed down.
Okay, very good. So we have less than 5 minutes to sell your book. let's get back to that. And can you give more of, I know we have such a short time, but kind of what the general is and the go-through from start to finish?
Of Coronado, it's basically sharing with the public about this one case. I know there are many about mass abductions. It just doesn't happen to one or two people. But this happened on an island during a UFO conference when President Clinton was also on the island. The island was swarming with Secret Service agents. And yet these dozen or more people were abducted. Now, the question is, were the alien beings just doing this to prove that they have control over this experience? Hmm. Whether they're Secret Service or anyone else around, they're able to do this under the nose of the president. Or was the president there because he was briefed on what was going to happen? You know, that's speculation, of course, but it was just a very strange set of circumstances.
I think Clinton, you know, I think Clinton has a passing interest in this whole thing, and he sort of denied it, you know, recently in a talk show with Jimmy Kimmel. But
right, I saw that.
But I think he really does have a, you know, he has, you know, spoken about it, and, you know, I think he has more of an interest in it than he leads on to.
I think so, too. And what was very strange is that, and I present that segment on Jimmy Kimmel in my PowerPoint, because this happened with Jimmy Kimmel in April, and my book was coming out in June, and I thought, oh, my God, what timing? So I want to show everyone who has not seen the interview with him about what he says about UFOs, but I have the impression as well And Ben Hansen does a very brilliant analysis of his body language during this interview. So if anybody there is curious, pull it up on Ben Hansen's website.
Oh, I have to do that. I didn't know that. Yeah, Ben's good like that.
In fact, I talked to Ben about it when we were both lecturing in Roswell this past July, and I told him, oh, my God, I mentioned him on Coast to Coast about it and in my lecture in Roswell. It's very interesting when you study body language, but I agree that Clinton has an interest, and I think he wants to know himself. He may know more than, he's letting on. But it's just, it was just the more, as I was writing the book, I just thought this is really, really strange, a whole set of circumstances. The reader will, I hope, will find it interesting. It's available on Amazon and on Kindle, and I hope everybody has a chance to read Coronado.
That's great, and it's been a real pleasure, and we'll be also looking forward to finding out, what comes forward out of this. You said you had some witnesses to see and talk to, and just real quickly, because we have less than a minute here, but are any of these people that are coming forward, are they actually claiming that they had an abduction experience at the same time?
Well, they weren't. When they spoke with me, when they emailed me, they were not sure. So I told them to look back on their notes and look back at that weekend. And it depends as well on their background, if they've had other experiences. It's not just a one-time, experience of people. They're abducted throughout their lives. So it's just one of those where I have to sit down and have a consultation with them and see what happened.
Very good. Okay, thanks a lot, Yvonne.
Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. Okay, so that's it for our show today. If you missed any part of the show, you can catch it as a podcast and a whole bunch of other free podcasts on our website, which is podcastufo.com, of course. And I want to thank everyone for helping out with the show today. Our guest, of course, Yvonne Smith. Keith Rowland is the producer for the Dark Matter Radio Network. Carrie Lloyd Whitehouse for our music. Peggy Shunning for managing our Facebook page. And don't forget to like us on Facebook for all the latest UFO news. Next week, we are blessed to have a great guest, astronomer Jeffrey Bennett. He is an excellent speaker. You're going to enjoy that show. You can check us out live right here next week on the Dark Matter Radio Network and every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And don't forget to jump in to the chat room and join in with the show at podcastufo.com. This is Martin Willis reminding you to keep your eyes to the sky.